Good afternoon, Steeler Nation. This is Rudy, Rude Dog Reyes, on the RudeDogShow.com. You know, it's not typical to get someone in the studio who is doing this on a remote basis. Originally, my inquiry to interview this particular player was impromptu, and he responded unusually fast. As one could have imagined, it would have been hard-pressed to turn on my TV set Sunday mornings and not see this gentleman, aficionado, dad, analyst, sideline reporter for ESPN, former running back who was a factor in many games for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Welcome, Merrill Hosh, to the show. Welcome, Merrill. How are you?
I'm good, Rudy. Good to be with you, bud.
Thank you very much. I do appreciate your time. I know you have some things going on there, so we'll kind of get right to it. Another exciting football season upon us. I'm sure you're ready to go, much like anybody else is who's an NFL fan or otherwise. What have you been doing to occupy yourself currently in this offseason?
Well, Rudy, there's always a ton of things to do. You know, I mean, the draft just concluded. I do a lot of motivational speaking throughout the country. My son committed to play quarterback at BYU, so we're in the process of doing some things and getting ready to get him to college. So it's been a busy offseason, very busy.
Busy as a dad, busy as an analyst, and getting ready. The draft had some pretty solid surprises, I can tell you that much. A lot of D2 talent went to their respective NFL teams. Shocking to say the least, but on the overall picture of things, 2 years running, a lot of D2 talent. Jeff Janis going to Green Bay, D2 College. Pierre Desir, another hard luck story, turned out to be a gem for the Browns. Hopefully they'll do something with him this upcoming season. He was drafted in the year previous. It would appear that stepping back in time is usually what I'd like to do. In the 87 NFL draft, we're going to go back, way back, the Pittsburgh Steelers selected you in the 10th round, 261st pick overall, at Idaho State University in the Big Sky Conference. People out there are probably thinking to themselves, I don't know where that is, and I've never heard of the conference. Many players have waited as long, if not longer, to be picked up by any given team. And at any given time, to be honest with you, Ben Roethlisberger and others have also spent a lot of time on the ticker waiting for their name to be called. I can only imagine the anticipation you were feeling when you were constantly being looked over until the Steelers picked you up. I've interviewed many draftees in the past 2015-2014 season, as well as Steeler players recently. What were your exact thoughts at the moment that you were selected? I mean, was there a face-in-the-hand moment that you had, or a sense of relief, and ultimately just elation being selected?
Well, you know, that back then that was in 2 days of the draft, you know, and there was 12 rounds. And I actually was projected to go in the first day. Now, when I didn't go on the first day, you know, obviously that's disappointing. But going to the draft, the one team, I had several teams come in and work me out after the combine. Mm-hmm. Green Bay, the Raiders, and the Raiders is actually where people projected I would go. Right. And the Steelers actually came in, along with Washington Redskins. And of all the teams that came in to work me out, it was the Pittsburgh Steelers that I thought for sure would ever draft me. Because they're the only team that didn't rework me out. The scout that came in talked to me more about their offseason basketball team than he did the football team. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, they got no interest in my football skills, but they got interested in my basketball skills because I could play basketball. And I was like, well, nah, you know, they don't like me because he cared more. We talked more basketball than football. Right. So anyway, the next day came around, and you know, actually I was outside playing basketball, ironically, and the phone rang, and my dad came out and told me I thought it was for me. And actually, I'll tell you, I had kind of forgotten it, put everything aside, and for the quick second, mm-hmm. as I ran into the house, I didn't think that it was a team calling me. But then when I answered the phone, you know, as I got close to the phone, I remember thinking, oh, my gosh, this might be it. And it was actually that scout who had came to Idaho State to watch tape and talk to me again. And he said, hey, Merrill, how would you like to be a Pittsburgh Steeler? I'm like, absolutely. And he's like, I just want you to know one thing. You can make this team. And that's really all I needed to hear. Once I heard that, you know, I was like, I told him thank you, I appreciated it, and you know, and the next thing we did is we got ready to go to Pittsburgh. So, and it was one of the greatest things that ever happened to me.
I could not agree more. I had a chance to watch your 100-yard blowout against the Broncos, which they had not done in that respective season. That went a long way. I mean, you had people blocking for you like Dermoni Dawson. You had Lewis Lips throwing in a block late in the backfield. I remember one of the announcers says, you know what, he's not the quickest guy, but boy, can he move. And I thought that was the funniest thing to ever hear somebody say in regards to you. Coming out of college, I mean, clearly three-time all-conference running back for Idaho State University, an otherwise smaller conference compared, obviously, to Pac-10, Big Ten, and others, bigger, faster, more agile runners in years past that were drafted by the Steelers or relatively any other team in 1987. I mean, surely you knew what you had to do, not only to get from the college level, but into the NFL level. What was the impact that you felt the minute you touched that field at St. Vincent College in Latrobe, Pennsylvania?
Well, when I first got on the field in Latrobe and stepped in the huddle, you know, the first guy I see is Mike Webster. So, you know, that's kind of awe-dropping, you know. Donnie, John Stallard was playing. This was his last year. He was in the huddle. Mm-hmm. And just to see those two Hall of Famers, eventual Hall of Famers, and just players I'd watched as a kid, and be lined up in a huddle with them was actually overwhelming initially. And then, you know, the first time I ever really touched the ball in practice, mm-hmm. I swear to you, or, you know, in practice, it was, you know, like a 7-on-7 drill or an inside drill.
Uh-huh.
I could not believe how quick the game was, just how quick and physical it was. And I remember hitting the ball the first time. And I saw the hole open, close, open, shut, mm-hmm. before I even got to the hole. It's like, I went back to the huddle going, okay, some things are going to have to change. They're going to have to change real quickly. I'm going to have to play at a much quicker tempo. You know, people talk about the speed of the game, and mm-hmm. it's really quick first, then fast, you know.
Right.
Because people are so equally matched up, and the game is played in the middle of the field, that, you know, the game is about quickness and power mm-hmm. more than it is just pure speed.
Right.
Speed's important, but it's really secondary to it. You know, that's why I was able to transition to the NFL. The one thing, I didn't have tremendous speed, but I had dynamic quickness. I had great feet, and I could get in and out of holes. I could move right and left laterally. I could get forward, quick, explode vertically quick, and I played with power. I mean, I didn't have the elite speed, which would have been obvious if I didn't have that. But those things allowed me to transition a lot better, and I became a quick student of the game. You know, this game you have to be, and no matter what position you play, you just have to be a smart player, and you have to learn how to play the game with a high IQ, and not just what you do, but what your opponent is doing. And you got to process things and understand things quickly. And if you can't, you know, great talent. You know, two guys that were more talented than I was, as far as, you know, a skill set, physical skill set.
Right.
You know, didn't make it just because they made too many mistakes. Coaches couldn't trust them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you just can't trust a player, you can't play. You know, and right. So a lot of players don't make it because of that. A lot of players don't make it because of that.
Right, right, exactly. You know, it's what you do on the field and what you do off the field. And both of those things, believe it or not, and a lot of the young players that I've drafted, you know, look, I've gotten into some off-field trouble, but on field I'm a star. You have to have the best of both worlds. And I've said that to many players, and they go into the NFL, and you really don't hear anything from them off the field, and they're still trying to produce on the field, but they're on the right path. You had enough talent, not only for the Steelers to draft you, but to retain a roster spot. I mean, what gave you the edge? What do you feel, based on what you knew that you were capable of doing, to get you to that next level and retain that roster spot?
Well, ironically, it was probably what was considered my weakness and made me fall in the draft. You see, in college, I played tailback and fullback. Mm-hmm. I did both.
Mm-hmm.
And in the NFL, they'll transition to the NFL. People say, well, he's not fast enough to play tailback. And then people, well, he's not big enough to play fullback, because I was like a tweener.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what made me really fall in the draft. But it was, ironically, the thing that kept me on the Steelers, because Chuck always had a saying, the more you can do, the more valuable you are, and the less likelihood of me cutting you. Well, I could play tailback, fullback, special teams, I could catch, I could run, I could block. So I could do everything that they ever wanted, and out of all of our running backs, I was really the only one that could do that.
Right.
And that was probably, and then so it ended up being my advantage, you know, and the thing that that separated me from a lot of guys, you know, in that year that I came in 87, 86, they'd had a lot of injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of running backs that played that year for the Steelers
mm-hmm.
that had NFL experience that I had to beat out. You know, there was as many as three guys. I think we had 15 on, you know, 15 came to camp, and I had, mm-hmm. and I think I was fifth on the depth chart when it started, and they were all going to take Keith too.
Right.
So that's kind of what separated me. And then in training camp, the day we started, all 5 weeks, games and practice, I made one mistake. And I was, and it was really not, it was really a minor mistake. I ran a flare route versus a flat route in a passing play that we had. I mean, if you really didn't, I ended up in the right spot, but I just did it in with the wrong path.
Right.
So it was kind of a minor mistake, and it was nothing major. Right. In fact, I actually thought I was going to get cut from doing it because I was coming back to the huddle, and my running back coach, Dick Hoke, he just said, hey, Merrill, that's a flat, not a flare. And Chuck Knoll was standing there, and he turned to Dick Hoke. He said, I thought you said he was smart.
Oh.
And I was like, what? I'm like, I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, this is like week four of training camp. I watch veterans, like Ernest Jackson make mistakes every single day, one mistake after another. And I thought, just one mistake, man, it can't mess. What really Chuck Knoll was saying is that he knew it was my only mistake and he was watching me. And it was...
Well, you know, you enter training camp, I'm sure, with a chip on your shoulder.